It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 180 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I've got a great interview with Kevin Joseph, the creator of a magnificent comic called Tart, which is described this way. Tart is a time-traveling, demon-hunting girl next door. It's called Buffy meets Doctor Who meets Sandman. There's some beautiful art, and you got some great storytelling with great scripting, and a sparkling character in an interesting universe that's just perfect for the comics medium. Speaking of which, we talk about comics and then focus in on Tart, how the book came to be, as well as who she is and what we might find out about her in the future. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Kevin Joseph, creator of Tart and also Hell Strawberry, two independent comics that I've come to read recently and really enjoy. How are you doing today, Kevin?
I'm doing fabulous. I want to give as much credit as possible to my artist on Tart as well. I don't want to take any credit that he deserves. He is the co-creator of Tart, and he actually writes and draws Hell Strawberry all on his own. I'm just sort of he's the tennis player. He has a tennis ball in the rack, and I'm the wall, and he bounces stuff off of me for Hell Strawberry.
Okay, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, they share a universe, and I do my Tart thing, and Ludovic does Tart and Hell Strawberry.
Okay. People always fuss at me because I wait till the end to tell people how to get a hold of things. If somebody wants to get a hold of Tart, how do they do that?
Oh, gosh, there are plenty of ways. Digital, you could get it on Comixology. The first four issues are in Comixology as of now. The fifth issue has been accepted. Mm-hmm. You never know when you're going to get up, but I think they're getting a little quicker. If you have ever heard of Comics Fix, the new kind of Netflix of comics, it's $9 a month for all the comics you can read. We're up there. Yeah. And we just made a deal with Farrago, which is an app, F-A-R-R-A-G-O. That's a free app. You just have to deal with ads. Mm-hmm. So it depends. If you want to buy it digitally, Comixology. If you want to buy it with a whole bunch of things, Comics Fix. And if you don't mind ads, pretty soon you're going to be able to read it for free on Farrago. And of course, we've got a couple local comic shops that have taken us in. Try to do this in alphabetical order so no one gets upset. CJ's Comics in Oakland Park, Past, Present, Future, all three South Florida locations, and Tate's Comics have us. So if you're in South Florida, I know I met you in Miami, but I don't know where your listeners are.
Well, they're all over the world, hopefully. Majorspoilers.com is pretty much of an international site, so it's lots and lots of people get to check in on these things and find out stuff, so which is why I like to give out as much information as I can.
Beautiful. So then digital, so they don't have to pay international shipping and kill themselves getting our books.
Now, as far as my understanding is, you've collected the first three issues into a trade.
Yes, sir.
Is that available in paper or is that only digital?
Oh, yeah. You could definitely get a copy of that. They can find me on Twitter, B-N-O-K-J, and we can figure out how to get it to you. Okay. We do Kickstarter for our books. Mm-hmm. So we printed out enough of the trade paperback that whenever we do a Kickstarter, there's always a catch-up tier. Mm-hmm. So when we're ready to kickstart issue 6, they'll be able to get the trade paperback with 1, 2, and 3, and the floppy comic 4, floppy comic 5, as well as the 6. So we're always ready to get you any form you want the book in. We're going to figure out how to get it to you.
It's so interesting that you mentioned Kickstarter, because it just seems like Kickstarter is the way for independent folks to get their book out and get it funded so they can actually get them out into the public eye.
Absolutely. It's been beautiful. The timing of it for me getting in, it's made it possible. Crowdfunding in and of itself has made it possible for those of us without contacts within the industry. I'll say without a big name, Ludovic and I without any names before we started working on Tart. So It's been beautiful.
Yeah, because I was reading on your blog, you were mentioning one of the things you were having trouble with is getting exposure, getting your name out there and getting the book out where people could read it. And it seems like Kickstarter is a great way to get people's attention. Because there's a lot of folks that apparently go through Kickstarter and look at books and other projects and see what's new and what's interesting out there.
We've been exceptionally lucky. We've met tons of people, like you said, around the world who have supported us. Belgium, Germany. We had someone in Singapore, United Arab Emirates. You know, it was kind of a beast to send international shipping because I don't know what's a province, what's a city, what's a region for the customs form, but darn it, we'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Because honestly, with new books, it's important to get the name out there. And you never know when you're sending it to somebody that it might be somebody that can actually help you get the word out about what you're doing. And so it's always good to have those contacts going on. It may seem expensive at first, but in the long run, I think it'll be worth it.
Oh, I wouldn't do it any other way to start. We were lucky. We made our goals. So far, we've made our goal in every Kickstarter we've done. I don't want to jinx it, and I don't want to be cocky. Mm-hmm. But when we went in, we had no clue if we were going to succeed because we were new. We did our homework. We tried to make a good campaign, but you just don't know. And I looked at it as even if we failed, it was a 1 month free commercial.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many did you do? How many Kickstarters so far?
We've done three campaigns. We Kickstarted the paperback that you talked about with issues 1, 2, and 3 mm-hmm. because they were physically finished by the time we were ready to go to New York Comic Con in 2013, which is the first time we went. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to have a really beautiful book mm-hmm. to present there. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've kickstarted issue 4, which is completely done in my house and has been delivered to everyone but my best friends who I haven't made dinner plans with yet to hand off. And I feel really bad, but they're busy too.
Yeah.
And issue 5 is at the printers, ready to be printed and shipped. So hopefully within 2 months, I'll have them in my hands.
Great. Now, is there the Kickstarter for 5, or you said 6, but not 5?
Well, 5 is finished, but it has to be printed. We have not finished the art on issue 6. For us, personally, we don't do a Kickstarter until the art of the book is completed.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very cool, because not everybody does that. Some people get started before the printing happens. And, you know, some people do it much after you. You know, sometimes they'll be just starting on issue 2 when they start doing one for issue 1.
So. Yeah, yeah. As long as I feel like if we have the art done and we are ready to print, I'll do the Kickstarter because there's little missteps that can happen anywhere. Mm-hmm. But, boy, we're not making enough money to not do our day jobs. Mm-hmm. If Ludo got offered 1 month of work and he had 5 pages to go, I can't ask him not to, and I don't want to be late. So I just want the art done. We kickstart, we print, we mail, we get the art done on the next one, and then we go. It's slower, but I found that independent comic readers are much more aware that it's a writer, an artist. We might find a letterer, which we found doing it all. And they kind of forgive the month or 2 or 3 or 4 in between books, whereas Marvel and DC, you come out a couple weeks late and people get pretty angry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, as long as people know and you're being honest with them, telling them what's going on, I think a lot of readers are pretty patient.
I found the community that we met in Kickstarter is just, they're amazing. They're nice, they're supportive, they're understanding. They roll with the punches when something happens. Mm-hmm. And if you run into a problem, you fix it. Our theory is if we mess something up, we find a way to fix it. And if that means we eat some money because we want readers and we want readers who are satisfied with our book.
See, I always wonder, and I repeat this a lot on my podcast, what stories did we miss before Kickstarter was around? People who had this wonderful story but no way to publish it or get it out. How many wonderful things did we miss because of that? So I hope that people didn't get a chance to do it now. They might reconsider that and consider Kickstarter to be able to get these great stories out there.
I don't think you could possibly estimate the number.
Yeah,
I'd never thought of it that way. Mm. But I'm lucky enough that I started after Kickstarter had kind of gotten it on its feet, and so I'm very thankful to it. And I'm not against Indiegogo or some other crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. We just started on Kickstarter and it worked, so that's you. So we're don't it's not broken, so we're not going to fix it.
Right. Now, you mentioned about that you got started creating the comic. What's your background with comics? How did you get into making comics? Have you been a reader for a long time? How did this all come to be?
I'm one of those stop and start comic book readers from probably about 12 years old. I did the stereotypical 12 to, let's say, sixth grade to high school. Mm-hmm. Because when I got into high school, I just didn't have enough time to get to the store. And all of a sudden, I wanted to meet the girls and impress mm-hmm. the girls. So I had to hide the boxes of comics in my closet. Now, I never got rid of them. They're still in my guest room now. But mm-hmm. And so I put them away, and I missed probably 10, 15 years of comics.
Oh, wow.
The two books that brought me back in, it's funny, I didn't enjoy. Mm. But when Dark Knight Returns, Dark Knight Strikes Again came out, mm-hmm. and the Logan Origin miniseries, when those two came out in about 2 months of each other, and it got me excited, and it got me back into the shops, and I found some really good books. Mm-hmm. And I was like, comics are great. And then I read the two that got me back in. I'm like, I don't really like these. Mm-hmm. But in that timing, I ran into Sam Keith's Hulk and Wolverine, which was really interesting. Finally bit the bullet and tried Sandman, which I'd always wanted to and was afraid to. And then I just fell in love. So. Mm.
I had a similar experience. I got to college, and I just didn't have the money or the time to be able to mm-hmm. keep up with them. Then after college, I got back into it. It was the New Teen Titans, to tell you how long ago it was, that got me going. And I read Wolfman and Perez, and I just, to this day, Perez is my favorite artist.
He's a great artist, and have you had a chance to meet him? Because he is such a gentleman.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He won't do a podcast interview, sadly. He's just, I've begged him many times, and he just says, no, he doesn't have the time. And you know what? If it's between a podcast interview and him making great stuff.
Let him draw. That's right.
Make the great stuff. Don't worry about me. I'll live. I'll find other folks to talk with. But
He's so busy at the cons that the first time I walked past him about six times. Mm-hmm. It was, I met you at Magic City. It was at mm-hmm. a Supercon. Mm-hmm. I walked past him probably six times over the weekend, and I had my books, hopefully to get an autograph from him. And he always had his head down. And I went, oh, he must not want people to come up and bother him. And I didn't bring the books one day because I was like, well, he's not going to, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was just sitting there, and he just had a smile. And I said, hi, you know, and you're always so busy. He goes, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there. He's so focused mm-hmm. on doing the commission for someone so well. Mm-hmm. I thought he didn't want to be bothered. But what it was he's so focused on his art, he just didn't realize someone was there. He was so nice once I spoke with him. So
he was at Awesome Con up in Washington, D.C. When I saw him. And he was supposed to do a panel. But he had this long line of people waiting to get his autograph and waiting to get drawings from him and stuff like that. And there was such a long line, he wouldn't abandon those people. He gave up the panel in order to deal with the individual fans. And I thought,
what a gentleman.
Nice. Yeah, it was really great of him.
There are certain giants in the field mm-hmm. that are just so great. Him, Neil Gaiman. You meet some cranky old vets too, and I just talk about the people who I meet who have been amazing. You know,
we won't mention the ones that are the other way because people would recognize those names, and we won't talk about those
people. No, we don't. And they're great people, and maybe mm-hmm. they were just hungry because sometimes you've been at a con for 8 hours and you haven't eaten yet. That happens too.
Yeah, very true. So, how did you get to making the comic? What was it about doing this book? How did you get in the process? What was it that motivated you to get started on this?
I'm an aspiring writer in whatever way I can write. And I had been working for about 2 years on screenplays. Mm-hmm. And I got to the realization that living in South Florida, not knowing anyone in Hollywood, I was never, ever going to get anyone to read a screenplay. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact of the business. And mm-hmm. still got them in my drawer if you know anybody. Yeah. But I kind of got into the comics and I realized that if you could find an artist, there was a way to get your stories out. Mm-hmm. And I was introduced to Ludovic Salet, the artist and co-creator of Tarte, over the internet. He had met a woman who I had met on my honeymoon in London. Mm. So it's about as lucky a story as there can be. Mm. And she thought that his art and my way of telling a story might work. Mm. And he sent me an 8-page story of Hell Strawberry. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I have got to work with this guy. His art is just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I've got to figure out a way to hitch my wagon to the star. And and I did, and I'm not letting go. He can try to buck me off, but I'm not letting go.
Well, he does do beautiful work, and that's one of the great things about it. And I often talk with people who, like you, are creating comics. And as great as a story might be, if you don't have good art to go with it, people are going to pass it by, which is a sad comment. It's too bad we can't say, this is a well-written book, you know, and you know, the artwork may not be at the top, but boy, you'll really enjoy the story kind of stuff. It doesn't happen. When people go by and they see artwork that draws them in, then they're drawn into it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The art sells the book. My story is there to get you to reread it and come back for the next issue. Mm-hmm. But to tell the story well, Ludovic is the driving force, and I never say he's not, because he's excellent at the art. He's a good storyteller. He's a good actor. And he also helps with the writing a lot. He finds things that I miss. If something doesn't work, he's the first one to figure it out. Well, maybe I would be the first one to figure it out, but if I figure it out, he won't ever see it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we have a very good working relationship where I'm the writer, he's the artist, but he's my editor, I'm his editor. It's our book. It's not his book or my book. It's our book.
It's cool because, you know, I have a friend who's creating a comic, and I'm going to interview him on this podcast in a couple of weeks. And one of the things that's interesting is, as we go through the process, and I kind of watch him go through it and kind of help him and advise him a little here and there as uh-huh. I can, we're amazed at how the various stages, and you probably have seen this too, because, you know, when you run into the artist does something and it fleshes out a little something or creates something in your mind when you see the artwork of your concept. It's a springboard for something to happen in your creative process.
Oh, absolutely. It's a huge inspiration to see it and to play off of it. Mm-hmm. In the first issue of Tart's a time-traveling demon hunter, if anyone hasn't seen the book. She's in 1950s New York. Basically, she's sent when a demon is causing some kind of trouble. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately for her, she never knows where she is, when she is, or what she's supposed to do. So she actually has to find out her job in each adventure and complete it. So we made her job a little bit harder than it probably needs to be, but that's the fun mm-hmm. in the book. And she has to go track down a little boy. Mm-hmm. And there's a page where the little boy, I just wrote in, let's get you some food. And Ludovic drew the little boy as the brattiest little stinker of a kid you've ever seen. And we ended up finding humor in the situation out of nowhere, just because this kid who's just been saved from a demon is being a real a-hole about wanting to eat bubblegum instead of real food. And that was not in the script in any way, shape, or form. It came looking at the artwork and figuring things out. So, oh gosh, yes. Mm-hmm. There's other things that Ludo does, but I was going to tell you one story, but it would really actually spoil the climax pages. So yeah, I'm gonna leave that one out.
Yeah, I hate spoilers. Even though the site that this comes out on is called Major Spoilers, I don't mind teasers. I don't like spoilers. I would much rather people read and enjoy. You take away from somebody the pleasure if you spoil something. It was like one time I was watching a movie, and somebody walked in just before the big reveal of the movie I was watching. Oh, have you gotten to the part where they so and so? And I just sat there and I looked at the movie and I said, well, I don't need to go on any further. All that fun was taken out of it. And that's what spoilers, I think, do. You have to be real careful with those things.
I agree with you 100%. And my wife is in the other room reading her book. She would come on the podcast and argue both of us down, because she grabs her detective book and she looks at the last page and it doesn't bother her at all. And I'm just like, We drive each other both crazy because I won't tell her things. Mm-hmm. No, I'll give her this. She won't spoil something for me. Okay. So at least she respects my...
That's good. Now, as far as Tart goes, why was it called Tart? Now, I'm kind of fascinated because, you know, the word tart means something in the English language.
Yes.
And she's not what that means in the English language. You've got a little pastry in the masthead, the logo uh-huh. of it. And I get a kick out of it because tart is her name, but it's not her behavior, as I can determine.
Ludovic was already drawing Hell Strawberry when I came on. The backstory is Ludo had been working on his Toxic Universe stories around Hell Strawberry for a while, but he got stuck. He just didn't know where to go with the story anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's where when I came in and we figured stuff out. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know how he had worked on it so much that it was so far one way. I didn't know how to work where it was. The clay was too solid for me to come in and work with. Mm-hmm. I came up with a story that is basically the full plot of issue one, and I sent him a script, and I said, I don't know if this is a Hell Strawberry story because it's not what you're doing with Hell Strawberry. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a new character or what. Mm-hmm. All of his characters have a sweet name like Strawberry. Mm-hmm. And a sour name like Hell. Mm-hmm. We have Cherry Macabre. We have Lemon Lamorgue. Gloom Tangerine. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. So I put this placeholder in. So today I'm going to call her Tart. Mm-hmm. Just to go with his thing. And the more we discussed it, the more we just stayed with it. Mm-hmm. And the word Tart has many different meanings, all of which eventually sort of play into our story. Okay. The pastry tart. Mm-hmm. When I named her Tart, I was thinking more of like the Pop-Tarts kind of teasy girls. Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking of the harder form definition of tart like slut or whore. So that wasn't actually in my mind, but it works for some parts of the story when we get there. Now, I will tell you this. I probably, going back, would not have named the book Tart. Because I had no clue how hard that word is in England. I tell the name of my book to a British person, and they look at me like I have just said one of the worst words in the world. And I'm just like, what? You know, it's not bad. And so I think we have a little trouble across the pond with our name. So I might have done it a different way, but we are what we are, and we're going to fly our banner, and if they're afraid because of the name, then they aren't ready for our book anyway.
Well, there's some translation between the UK and American English. There's a show over there called Spooks.
Okay.
And Spooks has to do with spies, because that's how they call spies Spooks over there. Mm-hmm. But when the show came over here to America, when people thought it was Spooks, they thought it was like a supernatural ghost
story. Like ghosts, right.
So what they did was they called it MI6. They switched the name of it over into something that actually sounded a little more spy-like.
Okay.
To us. And so that's the kind of thing. Unfortunately, those kinds of things happen.
Yeah.
There's another book, I don't know if you ever heard of Jeff Kaufman's book called Whore. And it's actually not about somebody who has to do with sex. It has to do with him selling himself out to take care of problems for people.
Oh, okay.
And he considers that whoring himself out in that way, which I thought interesting, because what's funny is the name actually draws a lot of attention.
Yes, it does. You have to look at it at least when you get a name like that. Yeah. You have to.
That's the thing with Tart, too. And she's an interesting character, and I'm always fascinated with books that feature women as the lead character. So often and for so long, as long as I've been reading comics, books have been male-oriented. And any women in there were sort of derivatives of the male character. Batman had Batgirl, and Superman had Supergirl. And so for me, it's always a pleasure to read a book like yours that has, it's largely a female cast that has to do with the protagonists, the people doing things.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of women that's involved with it. And I, you know, that's a nice change for me. I really like that. Was there a reason why you went that way? Was it just that's the way her character fell? Or were you intentionally trying to bring out some more women characters?
Well, there's probably about five reasons. The biggest reason is Ludovic draws elegant, beautiful, sexy, distinct, real women. He doesn't draw the buxomy 1990s image babe. He draws real women who, when he puts four women up, they look like four different women. And I love that. And that's just kind of the thing. And he's French, so he has probably a different mindset about sensuality, which I just really enjoy. As a reader, I went from Claremont to Alan Moore to Neil Gaiman, and all of them are either strong women. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say sexual, but Alan Moore was willing to put adult sexual situations into his books because he trusted the audience. Mm-hmm. And all of those things, you know, I grew up with, I just said Claremont, I grew up with Kitty Pryde and Rogue and Storm as my three favorite X-Men. You know, I liked Wolverine and Colossus and Nightcrawler, don't get me wrong, but those three women were the ones that I thought were the best. So mm-hmm. it just worked. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we looked at it as strongly as that. Now, mm-hmm. when we were trying to figure this out, because Ludo also had the deal that they were all, I do have to give a tease, the women she works with are all the souls of murdered teenage women.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking back and forth as after we decided to work together about what are their powers, why are they doing this, and we had to figure out our big story. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, why are they all women? Why are they not boys? And I just thought back to my high school days, mm-hmm. and I thought only the teenage girls could literally scream at their dads at the top of their lungs. Mm-hmm. And I thought, only a teenage girl, not a teenage boy, not a woman, not an old man, mm-hmm. would tell the angel of death, no, I'm not done. I'm angry about this, mm-hmm. and this is BS, and turn the angel of death away. Mm. And that in my mind is why they're all women, because they're the only ones that have enough anger and enough just strength to look at one of the most powerful beings in the universe and tell them no.
Hmm. So cool.
I don't know if that's true, but that's kind of in my mind what it is.
Very cool. And you mentioned a little bit about how the book goes and the fact that like Tart will wake up and she has amnesia at that point.
Yes.
There's a job that needs to be done, but she's not exactly sure what it is at that point. And what I've enjoyed is you've written this different issues and you've gone into very different stories. She doesn't necessarily resolve what she needs to right away. She sees something and she takes care of it, but then she doesn't get snapped somewhere else. She's still there, and that tells her she hasn't resolved what she was originally sent there for.
I wanted to do that as early as possible, too. Mm-hmm. I want you as a reader to not exactly know what you're going to get when you open a new book. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some great books that have formulas. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. And as a reader, I like books that go places I never envisioned. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted very quickly to let people know that there's a real problem with how the group does this. Mm-hmm. We have not explained in the book why the group does this, so I can't tell you. Mm-hmm. There is a reason.
Okay.
But it is not the most efficient way either.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So she is a detective and she tries to find it out, but she can assume if she's not doing due diligence, she's supposed to do one thing when she's supposed to do another.
Well, after like three issues of the book, there's a change in how the book functions. And I don't know if I want to spoil or something, but let's just say that the way that things go on in the first three books don't necessarily continue on in the fourth and fifth.
Yeah. I think the first three issues are very much to introduce the audience to our lead character, Tart Acid. Mm-hmm. We want you to know a bit about her and a bit about what she does. Mm-hmm. Issue four, we open up the group that she works with a little bit so you can see a little bit more about what her group is doing as opposed to her on her errands. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to open it up. I'm not a big fan of a five-paragraph written thing on the inside cover of issue one, mm-hmm. telling you 200 years of history.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, we want to just give a little, mm-hmm. get you comfortable, mm-hmm. give you a little more, get you comfortable, and kind of dole out one answer, but give you two more questions. Then give you one answer and give you two more questions is mm-hmm. how we try to do it. And our audience has been amazing in allowing us to do that because people could get impatient and want all of their answers, but mm-hmm. we're writing it a little bit like a mystery, and I don't want to compare myself to one of the greats, but you really, really, really didn't know what Voldemort was actually doing in Harry Potter till about the fifth novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate what she did in that way, and those are the type writers that I as a reader love, mm-hmm. And so, of course, when I'm inspired to write, I try to emulate the the Joss Whedon, Neil Gaiman's, J.K. Rowling's of the world, because, I mean, I'm not putting myself up with them, but if I'm going to shoot, I'm going to shoot towards their level.
Yeah, it's better to emulate the good ones.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'll tell you a really quick story. I was talking to James Tynion IV, who was in the middle of Batman Eternal, which was a year-long series, and they had just done a big reveal. And this was about halfway through the whole year, and people went online and said, why didn't they tell us this big reveal off at the beginning? And so when I got a chance to talk with him about it, that as well as other projects, I said to him, I said, what was your reaction, you know, when you saw people online going, well, why didn't they tell us this like in the first issue instead of issue 26?
Right.
And he says, that's because we're telling the story. He says, we're not going to give away the end in issue number one. We're going to want you to go all the way through to number 26.
That would be my assumption.
Yeah, well, I was kind of sitting there going like, well, duh, you know, of course they're going to tell us the big reveals when it's time for us to get the big reveals. They're not going to do that. And of course, some people, and he laughed about that. He said, yeah, that was the silliest thing he ever saw.
Well, and I did reveal this, so I don't have to worry about spoiling it. If we did an origin story for Tart, if Tart started when she became one, I would be starting a story with someone you don't know being murdered. I want the audience to love her before I put them through that. Sorry, I'm going to put them through that. So I also think when they already love her, it's going to be more painful. But these things inform who she is and inform how she reacts. So hopefully when her full story is told and people come back, some of her actions make even more sense.
Well, one of the things I enjoy about the book, and I enjoy about your writing too, is that we learn a lot about the character from how they react in certain situations. You know, she doesn't necessarily have to say, well, I'm always the flighty one when this kind of thing happens, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. When people have to do self-explanation, it takes away a lot of the fun of reading the book. But when we see her in certain circumstances, we see how she reacts, and we get to know her that way, which I really like about it. I think that very strong characterization through activity, and I think that's something a lot of books could really learn a lot from, because it's really important for us to get drawn in and care about her and understand her, and the way you're doing it is to slowly reveal little by little who she is, and that makes us like her and relate to her as we go through things.
Well, and I'm getting to know her when she does those things too. I want to say thank you, but some of these things just come out, and we have a backstory, we have a realization, we have a character that we feel she is, but there are times when she's done things differently than we had expected, and we're like, oh, that's cool, and that becomes her more complex personality. So part of it is just exploration and discovery, even on our part too. And that's the fun of not making everything so concrete at the beginning that you're stuck as well.
Is she based on anybody that you know?
No.
Okay.
She's based on everybody I know and, and nobody, I guess. The biggest inspirations that go into this book would be Buffy the Vampire Slayer and then the writing of Neil Gaiman. So Whedon and Gaiman, and I already said there's some Rogue in her, there's some Kitty Pryde in her. So if I were going to grab things that she reminds me of, they would be actually fictional characters more than real people. Although my beta reader is my wife, so before Ludo reads it, she reads the script. So I guess I'm trying to entertain her and pull at her strings, whether they be make her laugh or make her cry or make her cringe or horrify her. That's who I'm going for. So I don't know if she's definitely not based on my wife, but she's based on trying to entertain my wife.
Oh, well, that's cool. Because honestly, like the folks who made the Looney Tunes cartoons, what they would do is they would show them to the secretaries. And if the secretaries didn't laugh, they wouldn't release them.
Really?
Because the secretaries, you know, they did not understand anything that they were doing. And so they didn't understand animation. They would just watch it, and they could be an honest reaction.
Right.
Which is what they wanted. And so they literally took them back to the drawing board. If the secretaries didn't laugh, or didn't enjoy them, they would go right back to the drawing board and rework it. Because
that's interesting. That's so their beta readers. Wow.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated because that's always helpful when you get somebody who doesn't understand the story get to read it.
Right.
You'll get honest reaction and you'll get great feedback from them as to how things are going. And I think that's just a great thing to do that. Yeah. You've got 5 issues done, and number 6 is in process. You've got the script for that.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a projected end for Tart? Or how is this going to... This is going to be an ongoing series for a while?
It is an ongoing series, and it's going to be an ongoing series for quite a long time. If there are any aspiring writers out, I would advise not doing it this way. I would advise you starting with a 3 to 6 issue miniseries that starts your story but has a defined ending, and then you can come back and do another miniseries and another miniseries, and eventually you can tell your whole story. I didn't know that when I started. So we jumped into the ocean and we're swimming. We have a spine of about 40 issues. I love to say that due to Douglas Adams, we're going to make it a 42-issue series. If that means that issues 41 and 42 are 2 pages each, it may be. Or if issue 42 is 130 pages, so I can get it all in 42, that might be. But somewhere around 40 issues is the beginning, middle, and end of Tart.
Now, the last thing I want to ask about is there's a catchphrase you use for her. It's called Tasty and Toxic New Hero. Which, of course, the Tart, you know, the Tasty comes into that. And you explained a little bit about the Toxic, about the fact that Ludo was working on this toxic sort of environment to that. So that kind of explains her real well. I like the notion of her being tasty on that real level, because you're right, visually, the way that Ludo draws her is really cool. But you're doing a good job, too.
Thank you.
of the character. When you have a good marriage of art and story, it's a good thing to read, and then it's hard to put down. And when I go through the story of Tart, I'm always fascinated as to what's going to happen next.
Oh, that's beautiful.
For the life of me, I can't figure it out.
Good.
Because I've read comics for years, and I literally am going through the book going like, now what? And of course, that makes me want to read the next book.
As long as we can have you say, now what? I didn't expect that, but now it makes sense, then we've done our job. It has to make sense when we take those veers. I just finished Joe Hill and Rodriguez's Lock and Key for the first time. And boy, that was what I loved about that. I never had a clue where they were going to go. But when they went where they went, it made sense. And I was shocked and also just so appreciative of how they did it. So again, not putting myself up there, but that's what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to make a book that surprises you and goes places you didn't expect. But once we get there, we hope you think, gosh, it shouldn't have gone anywhere else.
Well, it's just wonderful. It's great reading. And I love strong female characters who are interesting and engaging. So on that level, too, I really like it. I think the art is spectacular. I think you're telling the story at a pace that's enjoyable and that we can gather everything as we go along. So I like that, too. I think it's a very nicely put together book. And have you done a book before this, or is this your first comic?
It's my first comic.
Wow, I would never know that. I honestly thought, when you talked about scripts, I thought, well, maybe you had done television or movies before you've done the comic.
No, I've done my own writing. I've done my own screenplays that didn't go anywhere. I worked at ABC News for a while, so I did journalism writing. I've always had the bug, and hopefully we can continue making books good enough that we keep getting to make others.
Well, I'm glad the bug bit, because it's a great book to read and great fun. Now, you mentioned when issue 6 comes out, you're going to do a Kickstarter at that point?
Almost definitely. The only reason that would change is if we found a bigger publisher that wanted to do it a different way. Because my joke is I want to be Stan Lee the writer, not Stan Lee the publisher. But we're in the situation where I have to be a little bit of both. So we're always open to bigger company that has some resources taking us on. And if they said, we don't do Kickstarter, we do this. I think that if we felt like it was better for the book, we wouldn't do it. But as long as we're funding it, Kickstarter allows us to do a better constructed book, a a book that we can put up on a shelf next to an Image Marvel or DC book. Mm-hmm. And physically, before you look at the story and before you look at the art, it looks like it belongs there. Mm-hmm. And that Kickstarter allows us to do that. Without Kickstarter, I'd be doing digital printing, which is perfectly fine. Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a blog, so if we wanted to keep up with information on it, should we go to that the blog, or are there other ways that you keep people informed as to what's going on? Because it'd be nice to know when the Kickstarter is going to come out. It sounds like that hasn't been set yet. So
No. It's a good ways off, because we have not done the art. It's months away. You guys don't have to worry. You can pledge for other Kickstarters for a while before we get that. I would love to be starting it in 4 months, but I'm not even worried about that just yet. The best way, if anyone is on Twitter, my account on Twitter is at BNOKJ. I have it on my phone, so I'm able to talk back and forth with people. Mm-hmm. And actually, we can get to know each other a little bit that way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the blog, Catch All Comics with a K, I'll spell it, KECHALCOMICS.com. Mm-hmm. And they can read my blabbering and blubbering. And we have a Facebook account. It's Facebook.com/TartOfficial.
Mm.
And Ludo, if you love his art, you can find him at HellStrawberry. Mm-hmm. On Twitter as well.
You have to apologize for me that I said you were a creator of that book for him.
Oh, no, I don't think he'll take any offense. Okay. he is so integral to what the book is that I, as a writer, just always want to make sure people understand that I didn't come to him and say, hey, do this because I've got it. This was really his universe. This was his tool shed of ideas, and he's kind of allowed me to play in them. Mm. He's the nicest guy you'll ever meet. So I believe me, he won't be offended. But I also want to make sure he gets his credit because it's due.
So how do you get a hold of Hell Strawberry while we're talking about that subject? Is that also, is it on Comixology? Where is that?
We don't have Hell Strawberry on Comixology. I do have physical copies that I can sell if you contacted me. Mm-hmm. The reason it is not on Comixology is simply because the money for Comixology comes into the Catch All Comics account, and if we have any profits, we have our split that we've agreed to. I don't feel comfortable taking a penny of Hell Strawberry's money because he writes it, he draws it. All I do is help him if he's stuck on translation. And so I've talked to him about maybe creating his own Comixology account so that 100% of the money that comes in just goes straight to him. So we haven't quite figured that out. I don't want to be pulling 20% of his sales.
Right.
Because it's all him, you know?
Right. Now, I met you at Magic City Comic Con.
Yes.
Do you have any other conventions coming up that people might be able to find you at?
If they're in South Florida, I will be at a nice little con called Creator Own Expo in August. Mm-hmm. And in September, I'll be at the Palm Beach Palm Con. Mm-hmm. And that is, I believe, September like 26th, 27th, something like that, which is done by the publisher of Cosmic Times, Martin Piero, a friend of mine I've met through the local indie scene. He runs his own show, and that's a nice family-friendly con, Palm Con. And if they're going to go to the, I don't know, can you say granddaddy of them all now that they get more people than San Diego? We'll be at New York Comic Con in October.
I like to say that's now the biggest comic convention.
It is, and I am shocked and so lucky. We started there, it will be a year and a half ago, so not this con, not last year, the year before's con, we started there. And I started there because I was like, San Diego is so big, we'll get swallowed, let's try New York Comic Con. And 2 years later, it's the biggest con in North America. And I'm like, well, I'm not stopping now.
were you at the one last fall? Because I was there. Yes. I was in there. I didn't see you there. That's just the funniest thing.
It's so big, you know.
Well, you just so got to have easy. To. Were you in the artist alley or were you up in the
small press? Creators?
Oh, you were in the small press. Okay,
yes.
That's why. Okay. Yeah, I tried to get through that stuff. It was kind of hard to get through those.
There's some
wonderful stuff, but there's also some junk in there. So I struggled to sort out which ones are the ones I want. I'm sorry I missed you up there.
you know what? We met at Magic City, and that's perfectly fine. Unfortunately, I won't be at SuperCon. I love the show, but I work weekends, and basically it's tough sometimes, especially near a holiday. And this was the one July 4th-ish weekend I would have been, and we have a family vacation that had to be that weekend. I was like, the one SuperCon I could have done.
Well, there's more to come. There'll be another one next year, so you don't have to worry about it.
I'll do what I can to go to Magic City every year and get my SuperCon credit at Magic City if I can. Same guy puts it on, so I think that should be good.
Are there any other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of, or is TART kind of keeping you busy?
TART's keeping me busy. I do the most different comic book you could possibly have. It's a black and white comedy called Underwars. Mm. One of my best friends is the co-writer and artist. It's about a monkey who is on a whim. Underwear is put on him, and he can immediately talk and get smart because science. And it's as goofball a comedy as you could have. That's more like a Tick meets Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There's a reason we named the company Catch All Comics, because there was no other name that worked for a serious, thrilling, mystery, time-traveling demon hunter and a fart joke-filled black and white comedy about lab animals and men's tidy-whitey underwear.
So how do you get that? Where's that available?
That you'd have to go through me, because we've sold out all of issue one and I'm getting a new printing of that. So that one you'd have to reach me. We haven't gotten that up anywhere yet. Ludo is so wonderfully technically savvy. We're able to get on some things, and I'm not, and neither, unfortunately, is my artist on Underwars. So we're not as available as Underwars. And I have things cooking. I have a horror western that hopefully will be available issue one next year. So there's some things in the fire, we hope.
Very cool. Well, after TART, I'm really looking forward to seeing those, because I think you do a good job of telling stories and creating characters that are interesting and fun to read about. So
thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Dying to see them. So, well, you know, Kevin, much success as you go forward with these good things. And when I see your Kickstarter coming around, I will definitely get in there and support it. So
I appreciate that so much.
And we want to see issue 40 of TART, so we'll look forward to that, too.
Oh, but you and me both.
Okay, well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next time when I'll have a fun interview with Roland Mann, the creator of Demon's Tales and Kray, among other things. But until then, keep reading your comics.